You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN. This is Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
What is going on, everybody? Chris is off. Dan Grass is in for the next 90 minutes. 800-919-ESPN is the telephone number, 800-919-3776. Here on this Baseball Monday evening, Brian Munguia, Jake Montgomery producing the program this evening. We're taking it right up until Home Run Derby 2021 out at Coors Field. Should be fun, should be entertaining. But we got a lot to do between now and then, and we got to squeeze it in a short amount of time. And as always, you can get me on Twitter at Dan Grassa, GRACA. We'll get to the NBA a little bit later on here in the broadcast, where the Milwaukee Bucks get on the board here, thankfully, in this NBA Finals and are able to hold serve on their home floor. Maybe, just maybe, they'll be able to even tie up the series come Wednesday night again here in game number 4. So we'll get into a little final stuff later on in the evening. We'll also break down what we could expect to see here at the Home Run Derby and all the other things swirling around here in Major League Baseball. But, you know, baseball at the break is a good place for us to start here. And not so much in general like league-wide, although we could get into some of that too here. But more importantly, what about the two locals and where they currently sit? You know, and as things stand right now on the 12th day of July, the Mets are obviously a first-place team in the National League East, and coming off as bad a loss probably as they've had all season yesterday to close out the first half and blowing that 5-0 lead to the lowly Pittsburgh Pirates, and they have to settle for a 4-game sweep of that series against, you know, one of the worst teams in Major League Baseball, the lowest scoring team in Major League Baseball. That is not a game that you want to lose, and really not a series as a whole that you want to play heading into the All-Star break, because it leaves a sour taste in your mouth. And then the Yankees saw what the Mets did earlier in the day, and they said, boy, you think that's bad? Well, hold my beer. And generally speaking, that was a pretty positive weekend. It was a pretty positive road trip for the New York Yankees and what they accomplished. First taking 2 out of 3 in Seattle, then winning the first 2 games in Houston, shutting out the Stros and that vaunted attack the first 2 nights on Friday and Saturday. And then they're cruising on Sunday, have themselves a 5-run lead in the 9th inning, and then the bottom falls out completely. And there were a lot of Yankee fans who probably turned that game off thinking that it was over. Like, why even bother watch? Got this one. Finished. Let me go enjoy my day. Hey, let me put the Euro final on and see what happens in the soccer. Yankees got this one. They're going to sweep the Stros. They're going into the break feeling good about ourselves and, you know, maybe turn things around in the second half. And then just complete chaos. And then Jose Altuve delivering that final blow, the walk-off home run. And the Yanks still take 2 out of 3. But again, if a series victory ever felt like a loss in any way, it was that with the Yankees and the Houston Astros and then the way that it ended yesterday. I mean, that was an absolutely brutal, brutal performance. So both of these teams, you know, Mets in first, Yanks right now tied for third, still in the conversation. You know, they could see first place a little bit of ways off, but it's going to take some work to get there, and they're still in the wild card conversation. But I think it's fair to say both of these teams, as presently constituted, you know, they can use some reinforcements if they are going to make a charge to October. Clearly, the Mets are in better position because they're in first place. And by virtue of being first place in the National League East, no less, you kind of think that they're going to have a clearer path to the month of October than the Yankees will. And case in point, you know, we joke about this a lot with the Mets, right? And how this is a team that, you know, how really good are they? Are they just a byproduct more so than anything of the fact that they play in the worst division in the game? And you never like to see this happen, but they were given another lifeline to the postseason over the weekend by virtue of the fact that Ronald Acuna Jr., who's the Atlanta Braves' best player, one of the best players in all of baseball, he goes out there and he suffers a season-ending knee injury on the warning track in Miami over the weekend, which you hate to see. It's awful. You know, baseball needs as many of its stars as possible, not less, not guys going down to injury. That's the last thing that they can afford to have happen. But as far as the Mets prospects are concerned of winning this division and getting to the postseason, you know, that's another feather in their cap right there. Because now you look at Atlanta, who I think from top to bottom I would consider to be on paper the best team still in this division, but they haven't fired yet this year. You know, and now we're in the middle of July, and you have to wonder, you know, is it ever going to click? Is this team ever going to play up to how we thought they would play? Now you miss Ronald Acuna, forget about it. Right? Washington had themselves a brutal trip out west before the break. Not to mention the fact Kyle Schwarber, who was their hottest hitter, goes down to an injury. He's not part of the mix. And now it's Philadelphia who has leapfrogged themselves into second place here. And they are the Mets' closest suitors at 3.5 games back. And, you know, Philadelphia is far from a perfect team. If you watched any of them this year, led, of course, by the ineptitude out of their bullpen. So they've got some work to do here. And so when you size up these other teams in the division, you feel good about the New York Mets, and you feel good about them getting to the postseason just because this division is the dregs. And as far as the Yankees are concerned, look, I mean, you know, they have it a little bit tougher. They can't sit there and take solace in the fact that their division is no good. No, it's tough. Boston's good. Tampa's good. Toronto's dangerous. You know, if Toronto goes out there before July 30th and makes any moves to improve that bullpen and can bring in, you know, some reinforcements there with the arms, you know, that's going to make them a little bit more formidable, I think. So, Yankees got their issues right now. But with both of these teams, you know, it's apparent that if you look at it objectively, there's as much not to like as there is to like. You know, and I could sit here and tell you about weaknesses and deficiencies and these things with both of these clubs. I mean, neither one of them really wows you when it comes to playing games against teams with winning records. Yankees record this year against teams over 500, 27-31. That's not very good. You know, Mets record against teams with winning records, 16-15. So that is mediocrity right there. You know, in the case of the Mets, you hear all about, well, you know, wait till the reinforcements come back. Wait till they get their guys, their injured players back. You know, and more I hear that, aside from the two pitchers, and Syndergaard, you're not going to see him again maybe until September. Carrasco is, I guess, getting closer, but can you really count on Carlos Carrasco? The guy hasn't thrown a single pitch this year. And it's got nothing to do with his arm, really. That's what's disconcerting a little bit. It's got nothing to do with his arm. It's like the legs are always getting in the way here. You know, and how do we know there isn't going to be another setback? So, like, are we really just going to pencil Carrasco in when he gets back and says, oh, yeah, this is a guy we're going to count on every 5 days? It's tough to. Really and truly is. And then if I hear one more Met over the last, you know, that I heard over the last few days talk about, you know, the impending return of J.D. Davis. Oh, J.D. Davis is coming back. Oh, wait till we get J.D. Davis back. Excuse me, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but when did J.D. Davis, you know, morph into the second coming of, you know, David Wright or Mike Schmidt at first base? Or third base, excuse me. You know, let's not forget J.D. Davis, before he went down this year, like, I mean, you know, he was very mistake-prone. And he was a guy that, you know, wasn't exactly the surest thing, and he doesn't have enough of a sample size to sit here and say, oh, yeah, just because J.D. Davis is coming back, everything is going to be right. Please. If I'm the Mets and the Cubs called me tomorrow and said, hey, you want Chris Bryant? I'd be like, what is it? What do you want? I'll give you J.D. Davis and then some. That's a proven commodity. That's a guy who's won an MVP award. That's a guy who's an all-star. You know, why not go big? Why not go for broke? I know that he's a rental player, but don't you think that that's going to help you more in the long run than, let's say, J.D. Davis? So there's some work to do with both of these teams. Make no mistake about it. Both the Mets and the Yankees. And it should be for at least an exciting month of July. You know, and you have to feel a little bit more encouraged by what the Yankees showed you the last few days than even what the Mets did. You know, because a Mets team that stubs its toe against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That is awful. Like, think again, what bothers you the most about that game yesterday? It's a 5-0 lead right out of the gates. Before you're even in your seats, it's 5-0. And this is getaway day before the All-Star break, where every single guy, whether home team, road team, they've got flights booked to get the hell out of town on Sunday night. You know, half of the Pirate team was probably getting on a plane at LaGuardia, not to go back to Pittsburgh, but to go down to the Caribbean or someplace. you know, to leave town for 3 or 4 days. The last thing they're thinking about is, you know, finishing up this game, especially when you're down 5-0. You know, half of those Pirates guys probably had 1 foot already on a beach someplace in their minds. And Met players, too, for that matter. So to blow a 5-0 lead at home to the lowest scoring team in Major League Baseball, that's an atrocious loss, right? Awful loss. And to only take 2 out of 4 from that team in your building to close out the first half of the season, that was rough. That was a bad, bad series for the New York. They might as well have lost 3 out of 4, because that's how you have to take it. Splitting against a last-place team does not necessarily do wonders for really instilling a heck of a lot of confidence in that club as they look to sew away the National League Eastern Division title. And if the Mets were really as good as, you know, some of the fan base and everybody wants to tell you they are, especially the guys in the locker room, I swear to God, if you hear some of the guys on that team talk, you know, whether it's the Lindors, whether it's the, you know, the Marcus Stromans and you know, the power of positive thinking and power of positivity and all that stuff, you would have think that if you looked at the standings, the Mets are 15 games ahead. They talk like they're 15 games ahead. They're not. They're not. The fact that they haven't gained any separation from the rest of this, there's not another team in the National League East that has a winning record. And they're only 3.5 games up. And they want to sit there and take bows and tell you how great they are. And the fact that they're in first place. I mean, they've got the worst record of any first place team in Major League Baseball. They got a lot of work to do over there. A lot of work to do. Dan Grasso with you here on 98.7 ESPN. We're taking it right up until 8 o'clock tonight in the Home Run Derby, Coors Field style. Should be a lot of fun. You know, they're also not using the humidor for the Home Run Derby this evening. Some of you may be aware of the humidor, some of you may not, about, you know, just what goes into that for Coors Field. Now, you know, because of the altitude, and I'm sure you watching baseball, the ball travels in Colorado. You know, it's a nightmare for pitchers. That's why people, you know, whenever you see a Colorado Rocky player, you always wonder about how they'd fare if they get traded to another team and if those numbers that they put up in the thin air are legitimate or not. So baseball installed a humidor there at Coors Field. I don't remember what year it was, to try to level the playing field a little bit. They store the baseballs in it for I don't know how many hours before first pitch because the humidor keeps the balls at a certain temperature. It slashes the humidity, so it makes it a little bit more level. Because in normal circumstances, with the air pressure being as low as it is out there, the altitude dries out the baseballs, makes the baseball a little bit bouncier. And then when you hit it off the bat, it's almost like one of those, you know, rubber balls kind of we used to play with as kids growing up. And then it's going to travel a heck of a lot farther, as you see. So the Home Run Derby, which is an exhibition, it should be a lot of fun. That's what it's all about. You want to see as many home runs as possible. They're doing away with the humidor, so maybe you get ones that are going to travel some country mile out there, which, again, it's all about a show, putting on a good time. And, you know, that's what we are going to tune in to see a little bit. See if Pete Alonso can defend his title. Remember, he didn't have one last year, so 2019 champ Pete Alonso, and, you know, the favorite is going to be Shohei Ohtani. And it's going to be bracket style, too. That's the way they're doing it. It's not like everybody takes a crack and then, like, the top four home run totals advance to the next round. No, it's going to be brackets, so matchups. So you got Ohtani, the one, against Juan Soto of the Nationals, who's the 8th seed. Sal Perez from Kansas City, who is the 4 seed, will take on Alonso, who is the 5 seed. And they do this based on the number of home runs that you've hit so far this season. That's how you do the seeding. Joey Gallo, the Rangers, is number 2 against Trevor Story, the 7. Story is going to be the local favorite there. Of course, the Rockies shortstop. We'll see if he's still wearing a Rocky uniform in a month after the trade deadline comes and goes. Matt Olson of the A's, who had 2 home runs yesterday, as a matter of fact, he's the 3 against Trey Mancini of the Orioles, who's number 6. And of course, well, you may or may not know the Trey Mancini story. Sat out all of last year battling colon cancer. So it's great that not only is he back taking part in the festivities, but he's having the season that he's having. And he's got to be a lock for comeback player of the year. So this should be a lot of fun. You know, these are, you know, eight guys who want to be part of the Derby. You know, unfortunately, the Fernando Tatis Juniors and the Vlad Guerreros, they didn't want to be part of it. And I respect that because, you know what, this is a grind. And some guys that have done it before have said, you know what, I did it once. That's good enough for me. It kind of, you know, takes a lot out of you. And then some people are, you know, having to just swing for the fences pretty much for I don't know how much time. You know, that stays with them throughout the second half of the season and throws off their swing a little bit. You know, Bobby Abreu was the classic example. The one year he went with Philadelphia, and I think he might have won the home run derby, if I'm not mistaken. His production tailed off dramatically in the second half of the season. Even David Wright's a little bit. The year that he went, I think it was in 06, the year the Mets won the division, had a really good season. And in the second half of the season, he was just not as, you know, not as much of an impact when it came to the power numbers as it was going into the All-Star break. So there's always some risk-reward when it comes to the home run derby. And, you know, we'll see what happens tonight. But it should be a good show considering the ballpark, the altitude. You know, that'll be a blast here. 800-919-ESPN, 800-919-3776, telephone number. Let's get to some phone calls. Eric is in Brooklyn. He's up first here on 98.7. Eric, how are you?
Good. How are you, Dan?
Good, Eric. What's going on?
Batting leadoff here.
Yeah, what's up?
I kind of got a little irritated. I'm a diehard Mets fan. And, you know, I agreed with some of the stuff you said, but judging them by their record being the worst first-place team of all the first-place teams in the major leagues, I think it's not a fair assessment, considering that half of their roster was injured the entire first half of the season. You know, I think these guys are going to start playing to the back of their baseball cards at some point. Conforto should get better. McNeil should get better. We hope Lindor gets better. I think the bats will be okay. I do agree they need some arms. The back of the rotation is rough right now.
Eric, I'll flip this around. Have there been I'll give you that there has been a decent amount of injuries, okay? Conforto missed a month and a half. McNeil missed a month and a half. But let's remember, when those guys were in the lineup, they haven't been hitting the ball. You know, Conforto hit a home run yesterday, and the way that his teammates mobbed him was almost like he was a charity case. I almost felt bad for him. You know, it's almost like it's a guy who's, you know, suddenly on his last legs and he can't play baseball anymore. It's like they were almost like mocking him more than anything else. It was sad to see. And this is a guy who stood to cash in pretty handsomely in the offseason because he's going to be a free agent. You know, Lindor's been healthy all year. He has been as big a disappointment as there is in the entire sport. And I'll flip it around this way. They should be lucky that they're in the National League East. Because if they were in any of these other divisions, if you want to use the injuries or whatever as an excuse, they wouldn't even be anywhere near first place. So use the division as a saving grace that they're even in the position that they're in right now, Eric.
I agree. But I think it's not just the Mets, just the Mets. There's a lot of players in the major leagues. I mean, look at the Yankees. Look at, you know, a bunch of other teams. There's a lot of players that are not playing to the back of their base simply for whatever reason it is. The year of the pitcher, the sick, the IP, and we'll see the second half of the season as they crack down. But whatever it might be, I mean, all the no-hitters thrown early in the season by guys you wouldn't even see normally throwing a no-hitter.
Right.
I mean, it has been a pitcher's year this year. So I think, you know, second half, let's hope the bats wake up. I do think 4 and 5 is a crapshoot in the rotation. They definitely, although McGill has been a nice bright spot, but
I like
do
McGill.
Need some help. They do need some help at the back of the rotation. Hopefully you get something out of Carrasco. Hopefully he's not the next Jed Lowry where he doesn't even play and just collects a check. But hopefully, you know, hopefully the arms come through, and I'm hoping Pete can defend his home run title tonight. He seems to take it as a very serious thing for him.
Yeah, and you know what, Eric, I got to be honest with you, and I thank you for the phone call. That concerns me a little bit. You know, how about if I'm a Met fan? How about, you know, if you're Pete Alonso, and good for you for going out there and feeling, you know, an obligation as a defending champ to be part of it, great. But you know what? Less with the home run derby, more about hitting home runs and doing what you're supposed to do with the Mets. You know, I don't care about the home run derby. I don't care if he goes out there and doesn't hit one home run and he loses in the first round. You know what I want to make sure if I'm a Met fan? Make sure he's healthy and he gets back to Flushing in one piece. Or they open in Pittsburgh starting Friday. That he gets to Pittsburgh in one piece. no worse for the wear, that he doesn't tweak anything either with his side, the oblique, his shoulder, his wrist, or he does anything to kind of throw things off going out there trying to hit a million home runs in Colorado. That's what I'm hoping. You know, all that other stuff falls into place. And you know, here's the other thing. You can't use injuries as an excuse about the Mets specifically and why they don't have a gaudier record. You know, look at the Chicago White Sox, how many injuries they have. You know, they've been missing two regular players essentially all season long, in Eloy Jimenez and Luis Robert. You know, and since a couple more guys have gone on the shelf, they're in first place. They're doing their thing. But you also have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, some of the guys that the Mets do have on this team that have been healthy, led by Lindor, have done an awful job this year. Awful. That's why they got to go out there. If you really think this is a championship team and you think this team can contend, they got to go get a bat and an arm, as far as I'm concerned. Let's say hi to Alan in Queens. He's up next here on 98.7. Alan, how are you?
Hi, Dan. How are you doing?
Alan, how are you?
Very good, very good. How are you doing?
Very good.
Well, I think one reason the Mets lost is they didn't pitch the ground. He should have canceled his bullpen session. He could have pitched the third to the sixth inning, not more than 50 pitches, and he would have probably limited to 0 runs, 1 run, 2 runs, certainly not 4 runs.
Alan, I hear what you're saying about DeGrom, and thank you for the phone call. I disagree. I wouldn't have pitched DeGrom yesterday. Here's the bottom line, okay? Last day before the All-Star break, you're at home. You're playing an awful Pirates team, who, by the way, has more All-Stars than the Mets on it, ironically enough. The lowest scoring team in the major leagues in the Pittsburgh Pirates. You have a 5-0 lead. You could give the ball to Dan Grasso, and you should be able to win that game with a 5-0 lead against the Pittsburgh Pirates. All right? And not for nothing, you could say, well, how does the pitching staff, which is a collection of bullpen arms, just one after another, that Luis Rojas was trotting out there because that was the plan, how do you let the Pirates crawl their way back into that game and win it? Well, I could flip it around and say, why did the offense decide to take the rest of the afternoon off? You know, nothing says, there isn't this rule in baseball that says once you score 5 runs in the first inning that you have to stop, that you're not allowed to score anymore. How about them? Why couldn't they tack on? After all, this is the Pirates. If you got to them for five runs in the first, you mean to tell me you couldn't score anymore the rest of the game? They had no problem putting up, what was it, on Friday night? They scored, what, 15 runs or close to it on that team? And yesterday they just quit after one? Luis got a little too giddy, and look, I think he's done a great job overall. But asking Edwin Diaz to get, what, 5 outs to close the game, that was playing with fire, and you saw what happened. I would have went Drew Smith before Edwin Diaz. Drew Smith to get you out of the eighth, and then Diaz the ninth. It's risky. I don't care who you are, to ask your closer to get more than 3 outs. For whatever reason, it just doesn't always jive. And now they got to see that Pirate team again for 3 games in their place to begin the second half of the season. They could have handled that one a little bit better. There's a lot of blame to go around overall for the way that one turned out yesterday for the Mets.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, Dan Grasso back with it in for Chris here on 98.7 ESPN. We're taking in another 60 right up until the Home Run Derby, Coors Field edition. Coming up at 8 o'clock, and you'll hear the entire Derby, every long ball, including the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, coming up tomorrow night also at 8 p.m. Eastern right here on 98.7 as baseball takes a pause on its season, and they'll kick this thing up again in earnest. Yankees open Thursday in Fenway. The Mets will open Friday in Pittsburgh against this same Pirates team, which game all they could handle, and then some over at Citi Field here leading into the All-Star break. We were talking about Mets before we went to the timeout, and just want to play something here from Luis Rojas from after yesterday's defeat. He was asked if it was the toughest loss of the season.
They're all tough. All losses are tough. this is tough. We just had it, and we had an early lead. We had the 5-0 lead, and we didn't get much going afterwards. We were short in pitching. We used the opener and then Eichhoff to give us the three, and then String with some guys. We didn't have Lugo or May available, so some guys had to come in and try to do the inning plus and could not quite do it, and that led to Diaz to come in to get the 5-out save. So it was a tough loss. I don't want to call it the toughest loss. All losses are tough. So, you know, we just got to, you know, be proud of how we play this game. And today I think we came in to play good baseball. I mean, we can keep our offense going. We can get some the last out of the game there. And we lost, but we got to keep moving forward because we've been playing really good this season.
Now, normally you'd sit there and you would grill the manager because you say, well, wait a sec, what do you mean two guys aren't available out of your bullpen? It's the last game before the break when you get 4 days off. What do you mean they're not available? They can rest for a week. But remember, they just had to play a doubleheader on Saturday. And that's the one thing that truly has been out of the Mets' control, and they've been the beneficiaries of some bad luck the first half of the season. And the fact that, what is it, 10 doubleheaders they've already played? 10! And I know they still have the seven-inning variety, but still, 10 doubleheaders is obscene. Especially for the first half of the season, 13 postponements that they had to deal with? That's incredible. You know, and think of it, it's just starting with the first half of the season. Or the first series of the season, I should say, right? Where the three in D.C., where the Nationals couldn't play because they had a COVID outbreak. So that kind of set an unfortunate trend that only continued for them right up until the break. Is that there was just cancellation after cancellation after cancellation. But if you look at the Mets, out of the break, three at Pittsburgh, three in Cincinnati. Then they come home for three against the Blue Jays, which is tricky. Not to say that Cincinnati's not tricky either because they're playing good baseball. Five against the Atlanta Braves at Citi Field, a Ronald Acuna Jr.-less Atlanta Braves. And then three more with those Reds at Citi. And that finishes up the month of July. You know, so that means trade deadline will have come and gone at that point for this baseball team. And I think the offense still needs some help, obviously. You know, they've had problems hitting in the clutch. They've had problems hitting with runners in scoring position. As I said earlier, I don't want to hear about J.D. Davis riding into town like the prodigal son here, that he's going to fix, you know, whatever ails this team. It's J.D. Davis. Let's pipe the brakes a little bit. And I will give credit where credit's due, though, with Brandon Nimmo. Brandon Nimmo's been a nice spark plug since coming off the injured list. And I've never been the biggest Nimmo guy. Like every single offseason when Nimmo's name is attached to all these trade rumors about going to get this player and that player, and everybody's so reluctant to, oh, you can't, please. You know, I never really, and plus Nimmo has a hard time being available too. He's hurt every year, it seems like. But when he plays, he's been producing. And the Mets need a lot more of that. And you know, yesterday too, one last thing before we get back to the calls. Diaz served another reminder yesterday, and you could say that it was, all right, they were asking him to get five outs, it's asking a little much, but this is the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, it's not like he was going up against the Dodger lineup. Not like he's going up against the San Diego lineup. Not like he had to get out like a Met killer like Freddie Freeman or something like that with Atlanta. It's the lowest scoring team in baseball. And he just, again, you want to trust him. You want to believe in him. It's good and better for the team if you can actually go all in on Edwin Diaz, but I just can't. You're always waiting for that other shoe to drop. Maybe not to the disaster that he was his first year in 2019. And he's gotten better since then, clearly. And maybe he's more comfortable with New York and the surroundings, a new league, new hitters, all those things. But I just cannot bring myself to fully believe that when he gets the ball, it's lights out. They can blare those trumpets all they want when he comes in from the bullpen. I'm still uneasy about it. JM in Jersey. Jersey City is up next here on 98.7. JM, how you doing?
I'm good, bud. How about yourself?
Good. What's going on?
Well, you mentioned that you didn't care for Pete Alonso wanting to that Pete Alonso being so eager for the home run hitting contest. But I like that type of competitiveness in my player. He wants to be a leader, and you know, he wants to win no matter if it's a preseason game, a derby, a regular season game. And I also wanted to mention, you know, you mentioned how David Wright fell off and Jose Abreu fell off from the
home run
derbies. Bobby Abreu, I'm sorry. The year Pete Alonso won, he went on to win a home run title and Rookie of the Year. And in a day where launch angle is everything, I don't believe that the home run derby has an effect on someone's swing like it used to.
Let me ask you a question, JM. And look, everything you're saying is fair. It's fair points. But do you want to see Pete Alonso hit home runs for the Mets or in a home run derby?
Well, in all fairness, he's been hot. He's been hot the last few games. So it's not like he hasn't been doing it for the Mets.
My point is this. God forbid something happens tonight where he tweaks something. He throws out his back, his oblique. You know, the air out there in Colorado is tricky. You know how many players complain about going out? You know, one of the reasons DeGrom didn't want to go out to the All-Star game, he's like, you know, the air in Colorado, it's weird. God forbid if something happens, I mean, he'll never come out and say that, oh, yeah, I screwed it up in the home run derby. But what if it did and it limits his effectiveness in the second half of the season? I personally would get no satisfaction whatsoever if he goes out there and wins a home run derby if it means that he can't compete at the highest level for the Mets. That's what his obligation is for.
Yeah, but doesn't that apply to everybody? Then don't have the derby.
It doesn't apply to everybody. It's a person's choice, and thank you for the phone call. You know, they don't put a gun to your head and say you have to go to the home. Was it an obligation to Fernando Tatis Jr.? You know, to Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? Guys like that? Of course not. It's going out there, and if you want to go, great. And remember, case in point, look at the participation. How many guys in the home run derby aren't even all-stars, like on the all-star team? You know, that tells you all you need to know right there. You know, Pete Alonso, if we're sitting here and we're, you know, adding up the home runs, I'm looking, he's not even in the top 20 in Major League Baseball this year. Let's go through the list of the top home run hitters. Otani, okay, he's doing it. Vlad Jr. said no thanks. Tatis said no thanks. Schwarber's hurt. Acuna's hurt. Gallo said yes. Olsen said yes. Rafael Devers said no. Adolis Garcia said no. Marcus Simeon said no. Jared Walsh said no. How many more do I have to go down the list? You know? All right, Pete Alonso's a defending champ. Great. Good for him. But I'd rather see him out there hitting home runs for the Mets. That's what the Mets are paying him to do. Pete Alonso currently is 31st in baseball in home runs with his 17. 31st. So it's not like he made the final eight because, you know, he's having this wonderful season. Number one, he said yes. And he's a defending champ. But great, you think that anybody, if he didn't go and hit home runs in the home run derby, anybody would care? I think most Mets fans would be like, great, rest up for the second half of the season. Just like Jacob DeGrom. As much as it would like me and as much as I would love to see Jacob DeGrom out there for the All-Star game, and I feel that he does kind of have an obligation to be there, to at least be there. Okay? As the best pitcher in the game, a guy who's, you know, putting himself in the MVP conversation this year is one of the, you know, literally the flag bearers of baseball this year. In a game that's supposed to celebrate the stars of the game and showcase the stars of the game, Jacob DeGrom is as, you know, worthy of being an all-star and worthy of being celebrated than any player in the game. Certainly more worthy than any pitcher. You know, and it would have been nice if DeGrom went out there, not even a pitch. Go out there and stand on the first baseline, and when they do the starting lineups, they say, Jacob DeGrom, New York Mets, best pitcher in the game. He tips his cap, and he gets a standing ovation from the crowd. You know, Brandon Woodruff of the Milwaukee Brewers, starting pitcher, he pitched yesterday for Milwaukee. Started the game. So he wasn't going to pitch in the All-Star game. He still got on a plane and went out to Colorado and is there. And he's going to do exactly what I said I wish DeGrom would have done. Tipped his cap when they say Brandon Woodruff. 800-919-3776 is the telephone number. Alex in Bayonne up next here on 98.7. What's up, Alex? How are you?
I'm pretty good, man. How about yourself?
Good, Alex. What's going on?
So when I called, the guy that answers the phone says, hey, what do you want to talk about? So I said, I want to talk to the gentleman on the radio because It sounds like he's like hating on the Mets, and I don't understand. He's like, well, he's actually a Mets fan. So, you know, have at it with him. So my question to you is, like, you sound like you're upset about the Mets season so far. So my question to you is, like, don't you think what they've been through with the injuries and how the players that they've plugged in and have filled in roles that they normally wouldn't fill in, you don't think that's valuable going down the stretch of the season and that builds something, like, to take with you during the season?
Well, Alex, let me ask you a question. The guys who have filled in, they've done a nice job. The VRs, the Jose Perazas of the world, you know, and a few others. The Kevin Pillars, they've done a really, really good job. But herein lies the problem then. Okay, fine. When the injured guys get healthy, who were regular, everyday players for you, at least you hope for them to be, then what happens to those other guys? They go back to the bench?
But isn't that a good problem to have?
It's a good problem to have until it isn't, because you can't play both of them. It doesn't become a charity softball lineup to where you could write 18 names in the lineup and they all get their chance. You still got to play 9. So what happens then? And then and by the way, you're not winning a pennant. You're not going far in the playoffs with the Pillars and the Perazas and those guys in your lineup every day. Because, Alex, there's a reason. We see this all the time. There's a reason that guys are role players, and there's a reason guys are everyday players. Role players, the longer you play them on a day-in, day-out basis, they get exposed, and they show you why they aren't everyday players. So you can ride these guys out as long as you want, but then you say to yourself, well, wait a sec, we have these other guys who we counted upon, and they're not getting the job done. So then that creates another problem for you that, well, we still have players that are underachieving for us and not doing what they're supposed to do. So then what do you do when it's all said and done? Play guys who aren't as good? Or then just stick your regulars back in there and hope that they're going to snap out of this?
Well, that's just it. Like, so the regular players are starting to come back little by little. Nimmo came back. Nimmo's been great since he came back. Thomas Nitto, you know, he's your plug-in every other day catcher to give McCann a break. And he's actually done a decent job himself. So if McNeil can get back to anywhere near what he was last year or the year before, Conforto needs to start changing it around. And let's just say, I'm not even talking about winning the division. Winning the division obviously would be great, but getting into the playoffs, with our starting pitching, as strong as it is, top heavy, and I do think we need to add one more a starting pitcher, because we can't count on Carrasco, and we don't know what Noah Syndergaard is going to be once he returns.
I agree.
So I think that our top three pitchers, if they could stay healthy and remotely consistent of what they've done in the first half, who's going to want to face those three starting pitchers in the playoffs?
Well, here's the thing. Here's something, though, that you have to think about, Alex, and I thank you for the phone call. And by the way, don't let it take into account at all what team I support or what team I'm a fan of. You know, doing this job, you got to be objective. Some people are, some people aren't. I believe you should be objective. So the fact that you don't even know what team I root for, I think is a testament to what I'm sitting here trying to do, because I could tell you both sides of the coin. I'm not sitting here with pom-poms. And if you want a pom-pom program, I mean, I'm sure they have podcasts for that, and, you know, the Go Mets podcast, or, you know, the Amazing Mets podcast and Mr. and Mrs. Met podcast. You could do all those things. You know, sometimes you have to tell it like it is. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of guys, you know, like McCann. Okay, McCann is underachieved. For the money that they're paying him, McCann has not had a good year with the bat. You know, Dominic Smith, say what you want about Dominic Smith. Aside from a 60-game shortened season last year, has he been a top-notch player? He hasn't been hurt this year. I mentioned Francisco Lindor, $340 million disappointment. Disappointment. So, I don't know. Are these guys going to snap out of it? It would be nice, because we're already in the middle of July. It's not early anymore. It stopped being early a long, long, long time ago. And it is going to be win a division or bust for the Mets, because the National League East, the way that it's constituted, they're not getting two teams in. They can't get a wild card team in. The division is horrible. So it's either win the division or don't go to the playoffs. And as much as I love this starting pitching staff, and I think these guys have... The three starting pitchers have been the reason they're even where they are right now. Those three guys. But Taijuan Walker has never performed at this level for a full season. And I hope he does. And I think he has been, aside from Taijuan Walker, is the Mets MVP, not named Jacob deGrom, in my opinion. okay? But he's never done this for a full season at this level, pitching to this, you know, to these highs. And Stroman, who was bothered by the hip thing, he's had a little bit of a drop-off the last few starts. That would concern me. And Jacob deGrom has not looked superhuman the last few games. You hope that a long season is not starting to maybe wear on him a little bit. They need those guys. They need them just like they needed them the first half of the season. They're going to need them from here on out. Dan Grasso back with you here on 98.7 ESPN. We're taking it right up until 8 o'clock in the Home Run Derby at Coors Field. Shohei Ohtani, the favorite, the one seed, the star attraction, all those things tonight here out in Denver. It should be a good show. It's time, though, now for the Truly Hard Play of the Game, and it's brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. And it's not going to be baseball. It's not going to be anything from the NBA Finals. No. We're going with a little Euro 2020 final. Italy, England, extra time, couldn't decide a winner, had to go to the dreaded penalty kicks. Wembley Stadium in England. Here is how it all ended.
Bukayo Saka, one of the youngest players ever to play in the European Championship. He's got to score here to keep England alive. And he doesn't! And Italy! Champions of Europe!
That was exciting. Ian Dark on ESPN. Congratulations to the Azzurri, the European champs. I guess technically 2020. They're calling it Euro 2020 because it was supposed to be held last year, as we know. That is the Truly Hard Play of the Game. It's brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer. 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, and 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, please drink responsibly. As always, you could tweet at me at Dan Graca, G-R-A-C-A. Don't forget, you could get me there. As far as the Yankees are concerned, look, aside from how things ended yesterday, right, and that dreadful, dreadful loss in the ninth inning, I actually feel good about the Yankees weaker than I did the Mets. You know? And think about the difference how a week makes. We were sitting here a week ago on Monday, after the Yanks, you know, had that brutal, brutal defeat and brutal showing against the Mets over in the Bronx, and the sky was falling, fire this guy, fire that guy. Then they went out to Seattle. You know, they took 2 out of 3. The bats went cold in that game there on Thursday, but you said, all right, whatever, it happens. You took 2 out of 3. Let's see if you could carry it with you over to Houston. They shut them out on Friday. They shut them out on Saturday. And because I got to be honest with you, despite the disappointment of yesterday's game, the Gerrit Cole performance on Saturday is still the biggest takeaway. What he did, how he took that team and put him on his back and said, follow me, I'll get us this dub. And he stayed on that mound and he fought the manager until the game and the job was done, I think speaks volumes about the guy. And specifically, what the narrative about him and how that was headed after the last couple of starts. And how he was able to turn it around from those two subpar performances against Boston and the Mets. You know, we were wondering, shoot, have we seen the best of Gerrit Cole? Is this going to be like Pittsburgh Gerrit Cole for the remainder of his contract with the Yankees? And he went out there and served notice and told you, no, I'm still that guy. He could take your spider tack. He could take your sticky substances. I don't need it. And he shoved it right up his former team's you-know-what. That was a gutty performance. That was a gritty performance. That was, for a regular season game, that was as big time and big money a performance as you're ever going to get out of a guy like Gerrit Cole. That was tremendous. And then you find out after the fact that he was sick, that he wasn't feeling well for the previous couple of days. Got to feel real, real good about having that guy anchor your rotation again if you're a Yankee fan. And it's a much different feel than a week ago. Much different feel, right? I know the Astro team didn't have Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman, but Still got a lot of good hitters in that lineup. That's still one of the best offenses. I think when healthy, the best offense in all of Major League Baseball with those guys. And it's so funny because the Mets and the Yankees are like identical. Last 30 games, they're both 15-15. Last 20 games, they're each both 10-10. Like, it's crazy. It's like mediocrity and inconsistency to a T with these clubs. Now, remember, coming out of the break, they're going to play 8 games against the Boston Red Sox in the first 10. 4 in the Bronx, 4 up in Boston. Those are huge games. And then after the Boston games, you go to Tampa for 3. I've been saying it for the last week. After those 3 in Tampa, that takes you right up until the trade deadline. So that's 13 games. The 8 with the Sox, the 3 with the Rays, and then 2 with the Phillies sandwiched in there. 13 games leading into the trade deadline. I think it's safe to say those 13 games are going to go a long way towards determining what direction this team is going to go for the rest of the summer. Chris in the Bronx, up next here on 98.7 ESPN. Christopher, how are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you?
Good, Chris. What's up?
Hey, listen, you were right on the money on everything you said. It was a good week for the Yankees. After the West Coast take 2, to Houston take 2, and Cole probably threw the best game I've seen in years. And the way he argued his way in there in the bottom of the ninth, it was awesome to see because you don't see that anymore. But, I mean, Boone killed me losing that game yesterday with Chapman on the bench. And I know he hasn't been good lately. I get that. I understand why he didn't start the ninth. But after they've scored 3 runs and they got 2 men on base and they haven't recorded him out, how do you not give the ball to a guy like Chapman?
Yeah. You know, Chris, I've been going back and forth with this since yesterday. And my overriding feel is that I actually think this would have been 10 times worse if it was Chapman on the mound again. Can you imagine? Seriously, can you imagine, Chris, if it was Chapman on the mound who served up that final blow to Jose Altuve once again? Like, then
you're
I
right
then
about that would have hurt more.
It would have. And you know what? I think that's what Boone was guarding against, because if that ever happened, I think then you reach the point of no return. Like, I think then you're done. Like, Chapman is out of the circle of trust forever if that happened. Forever.
I guess that's a possibility. But, you know, we felt like, what a weekend. You knew you were at the point where you were going to take 3 in Houston from that team who we all dislike so much as New Yorkers. And you had every opportunity. And when you see, I mean, you could see Green unraveling. It was, I was practically yelling at the TV to give it to Chapman. And I know he hasn't been good lately. I get that. But he is the same human, Aroldis Chapman, who was unhittable in the spring. Unhittable. And he could still throw over 100 miles an hour. I got to give that guy a chance. That was a killer yesterday.
Yeah, Chris, again, you're not wrong. And I thank you for the phone call. You're not wrong. But what about the after effects if it backfired on you? And there is nothing that he has shown you, and there is nothing that, and I'm talking about Chapman, nothing that he has done in, you know, go back the last several weeks that would give you any sort of confidence that he would be able to slam the door shut. One other thing, though, with the Yankees, and, you know, when we're talking about the weekend and we're talking about the Astros, and I'm so done with hearing about 2017, really. Like, the Yankees need to move on from that stuff. Whether Judge was making fun of Altuve or not when he's riding around or running around the bases holding the jersey and don't rip it up. Like, enough is enough is enough. Move on. You know what I mean? Move on. All right? The Astros, they had their whole organization, at least from the top down, kind of ripped apart with the firings. And rightfully so. They fired the GM. They fired the manager. Yet, here they are. They went further than you did last year, and you can't blame that on cheating. They're having a better season than you are this year because they're a better baseball team than you are. So, like, how much more is this going on now about, you know, stop living in the past? You know, maybe forget about that stuff, and then maybe you could start playing as good as the Astros are playing, because they're not cheating now, unless they're dumb, but they're not cheating now. Let it go. Go out there and win baseball games. Nobody cares about what happened 4 years ago anymore.
I'm not Michael Jordan. 40 points in a straight 2.
4 in a row.
Yeah, I'm not Michael Jordan. But you know, all I care about right now is getting one more. That's all. You know, just take care of business, doing our job.
That's Giannis, a.k.a. the Greek Freak, and he was a freak last night, freak of nature for the Milwaukee Bucks as they get themselves into the series, beating the Phoenix Suns by 20 on their home floors. We welcome you back in here. Dan Grasso with you on 98.7 ESPN. We're taking it right up until 8 o'clock. Then it's the home run derby from out at Coors Field. Hey, they were fueled by their home court last night. That's what you expected to happen. And there were really two spurts that really fueled the victory for Milwaukee. One came at the end of the second quarter. One came at the end of the third quarter. The end of the first half there, they went on that 25-7 run. They had a three-point lead, and then they stretched it to 15 at the break, and you felt pretty good about their chances at that point. But then, you know, Phoenix got their legs under them a little bit there and tried to hang around and make it interesting in that third quarter, and the Bucks used that 16-0 run in the last 4 minutes and widened the lead to 22, and that was, you know, your game set match. Devin Booker didn't even see the floor in the fourth quarter. And let's tell it like it is here, right? We're all adults. We're having, you know, pretty honest conversation here. I know Phoenix has a lead in this series. I know that Chris Paul's got the deepest resume of any player in this series. I know that, you know, at times Devin Booker has looked the part of a superstar. But Giannis has been the best player on the floor, hands down, the first three games of this series. And it's not even close. Not even close. And he's doing it at less than 100%. We didn't even know if he was going to play. Right? We didn't even know if he was going to play in this series. And then second part of that question was, if he does play, how effective is he going to be able to be? Well, I think he's answered that call pretty decisively. And he's gotten better since game one. Game one, he wasn't awful, but he was a little, you know, I think he was a little indecisive at times. He wasn't as aggressive as we used to see him. I think he only took, like, what, in the first game, like 11 shots, 10, 11 shots, something like that. Well, he's been a monster since then. A monster. Last night, another 40-point double-double. And how about that? He made his free throws, 13 to 17 at the free throw line. Now, it's a little bit different when you don't have the whole arena counting to 20 while you're sitting there shooting, but still, it helps. But a 40-point double-double in back-to-back games in the NBA Finals, you know what? That's pretty good. Even in an era like this where nobody plays defense, that's still important, and that's still special. And you look at the numbers that he's rolling out there in this series. You know, 34 game, 14 rebounds, almost 5 assists, and he's shooting 60% from the floor in 3 games. That's pretty darn good. And a lot of the production he's getting is from the paint area, which is what you like to see, because not only is that when Giannis is at his best, that is when the Milwaukee Bucks are at their best, right? And he played bully ball last night. He used his muscle, he used his strength, and that's kind of got him to the point of where he is in his career. And one of the reasons why they won that game last night is, apart from games one and two, Giannis, despite his brilliance, got some help. How about that? Some of his teammates decided to actually do their part. Those other guys that you look to in that lineup to pick up the slack a little bit, whether it's Drew Holiday, who had his best game of the series last night, and Chris Middleton, who, you know, made some big shots, I thought, in the first half of that game. Maybe overall didn't wow you, but he was good enough. He was good enough, and it was good enough for Milwaukee. And I think, like, from Phoenix's standpoint, though, I don't think you press the panic button yet, right? It's one game. You know, I thought that Milwaukee would find a way to get it done last night, right? With the series shifting back to their home floor, the crowd, it's loud, first finals game there in 100 years. You know, you expected them to play well. But look, Phoenix couldn't hit a three last night. They turned the ball over too many times, I felt. You know, Devin Booker, forget about not playing in the fourth. I mean, there's a reason he played his worst game by far, maybe the entire postseason, not just in this series. That was the worst Devin Booker we've seen all playoffs, but that's all right. You know, like I said, I don't think it's panic time yet for Phoenix. They can easily bounce right back on Wednesday and win this thing and go up 3-1 and then go back to your building for a chance to win a championship. I'm not going to sit here and say it's, you know, a brand new series until Milwaukee wins on Wednesday and evens this thing up. You know, the Bucks are a good home team. 8-1 in this postseason. Remember, the only game they lost at home was game one against the Hawks in the conference finals. And that was only by, that was a one possession game. So I don't think that it's outrageous to suggest that they could tie this thing up on Wednesday and then we get a 2-2 series. And remember, now you got like the 2 days in between, the 2 days off in between each of these games. Sunday, Wednesday, and then game five is going to be on Saturday again. So the NBA with the schedule back to stretching this thing out again. But you got to be happy, though, if you like the Bucks, and if you wanted the series to be a little bit more dramatic and more entertaining, because they did what they do best last night. They dominated the paint. They dominated the glass, especially the offensive glass. Last night, 20-2 second chance points on the offensive end. You know what that is? That's called offensive rebounding and taking advantage of it. And one of the things that I'll be looking for in the next one, though, Monty Williams, the Suns coach, if you saw, he was complaining after the game last night during his press conference at the free throw discrepancy, how Milwaukee shot more free throws than the Suns did. I think the Bucks shot like 10 more free throws. But you know what? He's playing the Mike Budenholzer card. Because Budenholzer played that same exact card after game one of the series, going into game number two, and that discrepancy narrowed a little bit. So it does have a way of kind of working itself out on the court. And we'll see if it's going to do the same again here for game number four. You know, it remains to be seen. But it was encouraging to see. And, you know, we might be, if this continues, and we're still a long ways away from this series being over. We're a long ways away from, you know, having to even declare things like this. Let's see how it all plays itself out. But remember that season, I think it was in 2015, when Golden State won the championship. I think it was their first championship, you know, as a group. And they beat LeBron, and it was the, you know, LeBron with Timothy Mozgov on his team, Cavaliers, right? When Kevin Love got hurt early in the series. Or Kevin Love was hurt in the playoffs, and then Kyrie got hurt, and he was like basically out there by himself. But he was the best player on the floor in that series. Like, it wasn't even close, because he was literally having to do everything for Cleveland to even stay competitive. And remember, they won like a couple of games, right? I mean, he did everything that he could possibly do. And there were people that were calling for LeBron to be the finals MVP, even though he was on a losing team. You know, Jerry West accomplished that a million years ago. The logo. That's how rare it is for stuff like that to happen. But the way Giannis is going, if this continues for a few more games, I mean, if he's putting up, you know, 40 and 10 every single night, you're going to have to start injecting his name into that conversation that, geez, maybe Giannis should be somebody that you think about handing over a finals MVP trophy to. If he's going to continue to perform at this level and Milwaukee doesn't win at all, which they very well still can. You know, and let me see them go out there on Wednesday, even up this series, hold serve on their home floor before I'm going to sit here and actually think that the tide has turned, because I still think Phoenix clearly is the better team and has the upper hand here in this series. Somebody just blow a save? That's what this music makes me think of. We can bring that one down, guys. I don't think we need to hear that for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 days. Let's clear it from our memory banks after the way the last time it was played, how that one turned out.
You didn't like the song choice?
Didn't like it. No, didn't like it.
You know, I'm a huge Yankees fan. I went to Citi Field and I got to hear that for the first time.
Yeah. Did he blow that game too?
He actually did blow the game. It was the doubleheader. Me and my dad wanted to see DeGrom pitch, even though we're both Yankees fans. But
he gave up. That's correct.
And then McNeil kind of made up for it in the next inning. But yes, Edwin Diaz indeed did blow the save.
Well, how about that? That game, right? That was where Jose Peraza hit the game tying home run off of Josh Hader.
And it's funny because my dad isn't a big baseball fan. So when Hader came in, he didn't really know who he was. And I said to him, this guy is, you know, probably the best closer in baseball right
oh,
now.
Not probably. There's, he is the
yeah,
best
and
closer.
I said, there's no chance the bottom of this Mets lineup. And then Peraza comes up, and I say to my dad, I'm like, I don't even know why this guy's pinch hitting. I guess they don't have anybody else. And, of course, I eat my words, and Peraza hits a home run off of Josh Hader.
Yeah, blind squirrel finds an acorn. That's what that one was. And you know what the funny thing about it is? So that was the first home run that Hader's given up all season long, right? And then 2 days later, it was either Friday or Saturday, I can't remember, Hader gave up another home run to Cincinnati in a big series that they played over the weekend in Milwaukee. So, I don't know. Maybe they got Hader on the right week.
Maybe Peraza broke him.
Maybe it's just, yeah. But you know what? I'll take my chances with him any day of the week. Like, if you could give me one choice out of all the guys who are closing games right now in baseball to be able to get me the last three outs for my life, it's still going to be Josh Hader. Easy. Like, not even close. But I'll tell you who it's not going to be. It's Mr. Trumpets guy. Sorry. You know, he's not terrible, but he, you know what it is, too? I think that every single relief pitcher slash closer that mans the rubber in this town for either the Mets or the Yankees, you're going to be measured against number 42, like, till the end of time. And it just really is a testament. It speaks volumes to just how great Mariano was. Because you see that guy do it, and you watch that guy do it for 20 years, and there was not anybody like him. There will never be anybody like him. Nobody ever as good as him. And so, like, everybody is going to be measured to that standard, which, yeah, I know is unfair. But, you know, those are the breaks. Like, we saw it with our own two eyes. Like, you can't tell me that, oh, it's not fair to expect a guy to be perfect every single time out. Well, no, this guy was mostly perfect. There were a few hiccups along the way. And, yeah, in the regular season, there were more that we kind of just forget about. But he did it so many times on the big stage in the playoffs when it mattered the most that, you know, you just glance over all the rest. And that was the genius of Mariano Rivera. Not just getting it done, but getting it done in the situations that matter the most. Look, I've said it, and I will continue to say it. The single most important Yankee in that dynasty, it wasn't Jeter, it wasn't Bernie, it wasn't Pettit, it wasn't Torrey, it wasn't any of those guys. It was number 42. The Yankees don't win the four world championships in a five-year period without Mariano Rivera. They do not. Because think about how just lights out the guy was. Do you realize the guy had a sub-1 ERA in his life in the postseason?
I mean, think about it, too, with the Hall of Fame. Obviously, the voters have been stubborn for years, not wanting to vote anyone unanimously in. And Mariano was just so good that they couldn't even do that with him.
Well, I mean, but he's not, like, the only guy that should have been unanimous.
You know, no. Like, there's been many over the years, but since they have, you know, since all of these great players weren't unanimous, the voters are like, well, if they're not unanimous, I can't vote for this person. But things should have changed over the years.
Absolutely. I mean, it's an extremely flawed process. Still continues to be. But, like, you know, how does somebody not, like, unanimously vote Ken Griffey Jr. into the Hall of Fame? How does somebody not unanimously vote Tom Seaver into the Hall of Fame when he was up? Willie Mays. I mean, you know, Frank Robinson. I mean, just like the Joe DiMaggio, Mickey Mantle. I mean, I know it was a different time and everything, but still, think about that. It's ludicrous. Henry Aaron, for crying out loud. Henry Aaron was not unanimous, right? So, glad it's Mariano. He's deserving, right? He's the best at what he did. Probably will be the best to ever do it. But as we spend so much time, like, measuring guys and what they do in the clutch and in the biggest situations, the fact that this guy, and remember, he didn't appear in, like, two postseason games. You know, he appeared in many postseason games. It seemed like annually, right? Annually. How many innings did he pitch in the postseason here? Let me see. It was 141 innings in his career as a relief pitcher. Most of them were just, you know, one-inning performances. And to have a 0.70 ERA, incredible. Absolutely incredible. Let's say hi to Richard in Manhattan. He's up next here on 98.7 ESPN. Richard, how are you?
Dan, you touched a little bit about Rojas and Boone yesterday. Mm-hmm. They both should have went back to the 1970s, 1980s. Do you know what managers did in those days on the day before the All-Star game, the last game of the season? they emptied their whole pitching staff. They would bring in starters for the last inning. One would pitch one batter, two batters. The other one would come in. Seager would come in. Kidry would come in. Ferguson, Jenkins would come in. I remember those days because the pitchers would not pitch. Maybe they'd make the All-Star game and they'd go in and pitch one batter or two batters in the All-Star game, or they wouldn't pitch. But that game before the All-Star game was crucial. Now, if Chad Green was the best guy that they can use yesterday, I have no fault with that. But he said after the game, they interviewed him, he said he didn't have his best stuff. Now they let him pitch the four batters. That was ridiculous. Five batters, four of them got hits. He should have never let him, after the second batter got the hit, that's it. He should have brought in either Montgomery or brought in Garcia. So I don't, you know what? I wouldn't have even been beyond bringing in Cole for five pitches on one batter. Five pitches.
Oh, they weren't bringing him in. Richard, come on. They're not going to bring in Garrett Cole from the night before. Come on. He threw 130-something pitches the night before. And the other thing with the Mets, and I thank you for the phone call, Richard, but, you know, and not to break any news to you, this isn't the 1970s and it's not the 1980s. You know, even from a standpoint of this, right, even just from the way you manage your pitchers and the way you do all that type of stuff. Nowadays, you got pitchers making $300 million, i.e. Garrett Cole. They're not going to overuse him. No way, no how. And remember, if you want to throw Luis Rojas a lifeline a little bit, Mets had a doubleheader the night before or the day before. That's all the Mets do, were play doubleheaders. So he had less guys that were available. Look, I would love to go back to the way things used to be. You know, where guys pitched a little bit longer, complete games were of the norm. You didn't have all of this, you know, pitch count. What was a pitch count, you know, back in the day? That would be nice, but that's not going to happen. It's not realistic. I mean, look at how some of these guys are baby now. Look at all the kerfluffle about Jacob deGrom and his availability even for the All-Star game. And, you know, they didn't even want him going out to that because it would screw him up for the second half of the season, God forbid. And he needs his rest. Not to say that it's right, not to say that it's wrong, but there's a different emphasis and a different priority with these pitchers nowadays. You know, you could also go back to, by the way, earlier in the season when the Yankees played the Astros in the Bronx, which was a good series for the Yankees. They took that series too, but Altuve took Green deep in that one as well in the game that Houston won. So there is a little bit of that history there, but you know what? There's history with Chapman too, as we saw, unfortunately, on the biggest stage. All right, home run derby. Ohtani against Soto in round one, I'll take Ohtani. Sal Perez against Pete Alonso, I'll take Alonso. Joey Gallo against Trevor Story, I'll take Gallo. Matt Olson against Trey Mancini, I'll take Olson. So that means Alonso against Ohtani. I got a weird feeling. Alonso could spring the upset in the second round and knock out Ohtani. I don't know. Call it a gut instinct. Even though Ohtani hit one 510 feet in batting practice, which hit the upper deck, but that's BP. That's what this is going to be, too. I'll put Alonso in the finals. Then you got Gallo against Olson, a couple of lefties. I'll take Gallo to beat Matt Olson, his fellow American League West compatriot. So then you got Joey Gallo against Pete Alonso in the final. I will take the Texas Rangers slugger Joey Gallo to pull the upset. This guy can hit the ball a mile as well. And by the way, Texas is going to be in sell mode, boys and girls. All right? They're playing for nothing for the rest of the season. They're a last-place team. A left-handed bat like Gallo's would look mighty nice in a certain ballpark over there in the Bronx. And I think you know what I'm getting at. He is tailor-made for that ballpark. Question is, what are you going to give up and what's the price tag going to get him? Because he's not a rental player. He's a guy who's got a couple of more years here, so you know that Texas is going to want a little bit more for his services. Or maybe they decide to, you know what, keep him around and think that they're going to maybe invest a little bit more in terms of the payroll. Remember, they got that brand new stadium down there in Texas. They might try to increase payroll during the offseason. They want a guy like Gallo to be part of the mix again next year when they feel that they could be a little bit more competitive. We'll see how it goes, though. But that's going to be it for us. Like I said, I'm going out on a limb here. Gallo to win the home run derby. We'll see if we're right. We're going to be back with you tomorrow, same time at 6:30. Except tomorrow, we're going to lead you into the All-Star game at Coors Field. Thanks to Brian Munguia. Thanks to Jake Montgomery. I'm Dan Graca.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.